dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman whose intelligence I've admired for a long time and who has brought it to bear for many worthy causes is our first guest. She is, as we speak, preparing to put on a major program in New York City, and it is on a subject near and dear to the heart of not only yours truly, but I think many listeners to this program, and it should be to all of us, really. The title of the program is The Rise of Global Religious Intolerance, The New Anti-Semitism and Alarming Trends in Christian and Minority Persecution. It is a project that is being sponsored by her own organization, the Anglosphere Society, the Hudson Institute's Center for Religious Freedom, and an initiative of the Hungarian government called Hungary Helps. Her name is Amanda Bowman. She's a dear friend and valued colleague, and we're delighted to have her with us on the eve of this important initiative. Amanda, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's so good to have you.
Thank you so much, Frank, and thank you for a very warm introduction.
Well, warm and heartfelt and deserved. So, you have been on this case of Christian persecution for some time now, and I guess I would ask you, with respect to the alarming trends, what do you consider to be the most alarming of those trends?
I think it is the attack. If you had to put all the different attacks that have happened, whether it's in France, or in different European countries, or even here in the United States, they are essentially attacks on the exercise of freedom and the rights for, especially in sort of moral and religious matters. And that is, in fact, an inalienable requirement of the dignity of the human person. So all our dignity, or every individual's dignity, is attacked, whether it is in the form of an anti-Semitic attack or an attack on Christians. It really affects every single one of us. No man or woman is an island. And we're all born free and equal in dignity, and we need to see that any attack on any human being, especially an attack on their religious faith, on their attack on faith, is something that should be fought by decent people everywhere.
Indeed. I thought you might respond to that question by answering with one of the most alarming of these trends, I think. By some estimates, specifically that of Open Doors USA, which does an annual calculation of the number of Christians being heavily persecuted around the world, as you know, Amanda, last year they estimated there were 215 million such Christians. This year, they've estimated that the number is 30 million more, namely 245 million. That is an egregiously alarming trend, it would seem to me. And do you have a sense of what is impelling not only this barbaric treatment of Christians, among others who are being persecuted, to be sure, but these are the most massively persecuted? The numbers, are frankly staggering when you think about it. The total number is estimated to be something on the order of 327 million. And that's approximately the number of every man, woman, and child in the United States of America, which is a stunning way to think about it. But what's going on here? Why is it increasing, especially?
Well, the causes are varied, I think. But we're releasing today the press release on the aid to the church in need, and they've come up with 300 million Christians persecuted in 21 countries. and 61% of the world's population live in countries where religious freedom is not respected. So I think those numbers are very true, because these two organizations have devoted their life, have devoted their whole mission to trying to help this cause. I think you have a number of things going on. In Europe, for instance, I think that you have the jihadist. Most of all these attacks, I think, in Europe have been undertaken by jihadists. And that is part of their own ideology. And then you have also the attacks on Christians by authoritarian governments. And it's very, as you know, Frank, in China and Nigeria, this is where the growth of this persecution is being tracked. And you have, and that goes back to the fact that it's, you know, attacks on freedom and human dignity. And it's the most underreported situation.
It is. And you're helpfully covering this in all of its manifestations. In addition to the Christian persecution, that of others, and notably anti-Semitism, which is also on the rise, unfortunately. And what's going on in China is the hands of the authoritarian communist regime there, totalitarian. And Amanda, again, the risk of stealing your thunder, what would you anticipate will be the upshot of this meeting? Do you see that this team that you're pulling together is going to advance some new initiatives that should be undertaken to try to deal with this growing crisis of persecution?
I sincerely hope so. The origin of this symposia that we've been having for the last 4 years was Cardinal Dolan's request to create a movement of engaged people against what he sees as the war on faith. And so whereas we looked last year at the riot at, 20 years after the passage of the United States declaring that religious freedom was a priority, foreign policy priority, we looked at what was going on, and then we subheaded it, the best of times and the worst of times, because there has been some progress, but there's been some terrible things happening too. And I think the subtitle of our program this year sums up what we're trying to have happen, which is, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. So this is an effort to get our friends to be part of a movement to bring attention to this and to be engaged in it. And very much what you're doing with Save the Christians is part of that.
Well, it is. This is all what we're about here. Hugely important, and not enough has been done to date, and so much more is in order, especially given those horrific numbers, and we look forward as ever to working with you on it. And Amanda, I did want to just in closing mention, I don't know if you've seen it, but we're going to be talking at length about an extraordinary speech by the Attorney General of the United States, Bill Barr, at Notre Dame, I believe weekend before last. The war on religion, a vitally important topic, and I so appreciate what you're doing on it and look forward to being with you in the course of the program. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for letting me have you for this program at Secure Freedom Radio. Come back to us again afterwards. We'll look forward to a further visit.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's time for our weekly tour of the Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. That is, of course, the name of his now quite celebrated and accomplished television program on Blaze TV, but I think of it as the place we repair to with him each week. Kevin is, of course, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy, our duty expert on economic warfare matters. He is also the author of two terrific books, Secret Weapon and Game Plan, and The Driving Force Behind GlobalEconomicWarfare.com. You can find out more about how to see Kevin's program at economicwarfare.com. Kevin, it's good to have you back. Welcome. So glad to have you.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
Well, I'm always happy to have you with us, but particularly so as I'm trying to unravel what on earth is going on in the consideration of what seems to be one of the most egregious errors of judgment in the national security arena at the moment, and that is that Wall Street is investing immense amounts of our money, pension funds and institutional investments and even individual investors, in companies in China that are doing very ominous things, ominous for the people of China in some cases, ominous for us and for their neighbors and the wider world, for that matter. One of the particular issues is this thrift savings plan of the federal government retirement, you know, for military and civilian personnel. Kevin, what do you make of the fact that we're watching this practice of sending trillions of dollars to an increasingly hostile power, specifically in the form of underwriting of companies that are very much at odds with our interests and security?
Well, Frank, there is no question in my mind that Wall Street does not see China as a foe, but an opportunity. And the problem with that thinking is, it's what we always say, what we see as a marketplace, that means what Wall Street says is a marketplace, our enemies see as a battle space. China realizes that they can capture American money through Wall Street. They'll pay Wall Street handsomely for it, which makes those firms that are doing that kind of business, whether they mean to be so or not, they're essentially traitors, because this Chinese regime is not friendly to the interests of the American people. It's not even friendly to the interests of its own people.
There is an interesting story at the Washington Free Beacon today, Kevin, that kind of brings this into sharp relief. Hunter Biden, the former vice president's son, while his father was in office, went on the board of a Chinese government-funded investment outfit, apparently, and it partnered up with a company called Aviation Industry Company of China, or Corporation of China, that better known as AVIC. It's one of the companies that is in these portfolios, the Morgan Stanley Capital International family of portfolios of indexes, and would be in the thrift savings plan if the board that oversees that fund had its way. And we are on notice that this particular company, AVIC, has been stealing our military secrets and other intellectual property. And those designs and weapon system technologies are now being put in the service of the Chinese, presumably, ultimately, with the intent of killing Americans. This is simply unconscionable that some of those Americans who may be targeted by these weapons would be effectively compelled by this Thrift Savings Board to invest in the very companies that are putting them in harm's way. Again, what would it take, Kevin, if, as you say, this is treasonous behavior, to get it to stop?
Well, you know, the depths of how bad it is with AVIC, you know, has barely been plumbed, in that AVIC hacked U.S. networks to steal the designs of our F-35 fighter jet, and they used the design to build their own stealth fighters, according to this Free Beacon article. And then they partnered with BHR Partners, which is a state-backed Chinese equity firm. That's the one Hunter Biden sat on the board of.
Still does, as of now.
Yes. Why would they pay this man so much money to be on this board? What is special about? Oh, wait, he's the son of the vice president. The corruption and the depth of the corruption here is so intense. We're worried about a phone call over matters with Ukraine that's been completely dismissed, and we have the transcript. What we don't have access to are all of the dealings of this private equity firm, the Chinese companies that have invested in them, Hunter Biden, the role Joe Biden played to help his son. These are the things that must be investigated. They've got to be rooted out because this is our future at stake with the Chinese, period. This is the problem.
Yeah, we keep being told that all of these concerns are unfounded. But here's one of the things that I took away from that Free Beacon article, Kevin Freeman, is this firm on whose board Hunter Biden sat at the time and its partner AVIC had to come to the United States government's Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States to get approval to purchase this company, Hennigan or whatever it's called, in the United States. There's no such review, unfortunately, for financial investments, but there is such a review for foreign investments trying to buy up American seed corn. And that would almost certainly have been something that Joe Biden was aware of, and I'd be very surprised if he was not actually encouraging the approval of that particular acquisition by this Chinese partnership on his watch. What say you?
Well, there's no question. First off, this is why they have to make such a big deal out of the Ukraine call. And because there's so much dirt here, and the president asked the Ukraine government, based on the transcript that I've seen, to support a Justice Department investigation. They didn't ask him to do anything unseemly. Why do we have to make such a big stink? It's a magician's trick. We've got to get you to look over at a different part so we can cover up and hide what's really going on. And when we unravel what Hunter Biden was doing both in the Ukraine and in China with his investments, and you know, the media takes at face value, they'll take, well, his attorney said he didn't make a dime off those. You know, we don't take the president at face value, and he's duly elected by a majority of the American states, by electoral college. He was properly elected, properly seated. We won't take his word. We investigate that. But Hunter Biden, oh, his lawyer's word is enough. It's golden. We put that away. This is what the problem is. It is highly politicized. And there is a group of partisans in this country that are making money off the demise of the American Republic. They're selling out our nation, and they're trying to cover it up. So this has got to be investigated, and we've got to put the focus where the actual magician is operating.
Yeah. It's known in political parlance, I think, as projection or simply deflection. But you're absolutely right. It is the shiny dangling object, this impeachment process, and we ignore what's really afoot here at our peril. Kevin, let me turn to another piece of this. I don't know whether the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, CFIUS, is on the case or not, but the Chinese apparently are still beavering away at buying up key assets in Silicon Valley. The Wall Street Journal reported on this yesterday. What do you make of the stakes associated with this? Again, as you've said so often, we may think this is just business or a marketplace, but what do they see it as in terms of the battle space?
Well, for China, and they've been very open about this, that we want to acquire American technology so we can leapfrog and into the 21st century. They were very and we thought we were selling them technology with the hopes that they would emerge as a democratic capitalist nation that was a part of the world of nations. What they've used with the technology is they've used it for surveillance of their own population. They've used it to repress free speech. They've used it to really persecute people around the world and maintain control for the Chinese Communist Party. They've in no way liberalized with access to Western technology. And they've also used it to develop very sophisticated military systems, where they clearly stated, if you read the literature, they clearly stated they intend to be the dominant force on the planet. They want the rest of the world, in essence, beneath them. And they said it very plainly with Alibaba. We're going to raise $25 billion. What are you going to do with that money? We're going to buy up technology assets. This is a problem, is that they've been very plain and open in what they're doing, and we have always looked for Well, maybe they don't mean that. Maybe that's not what they're doing. But no, they're doing it. And it, this idea that they could continue to buy in Silicon Valley, again, it, you know, we've got the treason of Wall Street, potentially. We've got the treason of Silicon Valley that would be willing to sell out the future of our country.
Yeah. Kevin, might a solution to both of those problems be for the Morgan Stanley Capital International and other kinds of indexes or passive investment vehicles to be putting money instead into some of these American companies so that there's still a good use for those funds, but they're not going to be put in the hands of our enemies to enhance their threats to us, whether it's through direct investment in their own companies or their investment and acquisition of ours?
Well, what a novel idea. What, you know, here's a cutting out the middleman opportunity. If you just wanted to purely look at it from economics, why give money to the Chinese who will then use that money to either steal our technology or acquire our technology? And those are the two things. Why not just invest directly in the technology? Cut out the middleman
and keep it all here. Yeah. And keep the technology here at home as well. Kevin Freeman, this is the sort of thing that you have been cultivating, I know, at the National Security Investment Consultants Institute, and we commend you for that work, as well as what you do, of course, at Economic War Room, Blaze TV. Thanks for joining us. Come back to us again soon.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's a delight to say we are joined by one of my favorite people in Washington and, well, for that matter, anywhere in the country. Her name is Jenny Beth Martin. She is one of the founders of the Tea Party movement these days, is the honorary chairman of the Tea Party Patriots Action. She is an extraordinarily influential figure. Indeed, Time magazine has called her one of the 100 most influential leaders in the world. She is also the author of Tea Party Patriots, the Second American Revolution. And I'm always delighted to catch up with her, especially here at Secure Freedom Radio. Jenny Beth, it's good to have you. Welcome.
It's so good to be with you, Frank.
I want to start by just setting the stage a little bit, Jenny Beth, to remind our listeners about the genesis of the Tea Party and your particular role in helping give expression to it through the Tea Party Patriots.
We started in 2009 as a response to a government that was growing too big and was spending too much money. Rick Santelli had a rant on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange on CNBC complaining about the stimulus bill. He said our founding fathers would be turning over on their graves and we should have a tea party like they did. The very next day, we got on a conference call with about 24 or so people from around the country. And a week later, we had 48 tea parties with 35,000 people in attendance a week later. And then on tax day, we had over 850 tea parties around the entire country. We stood for three things then, and we still stand for the exact same three things. We call them today personal freedom, economic freedom, and a debt-free future. Back then, we said free markets, fiscal responsibility, and constitutionally limited government. We say it differently, but it means the same thing. And we have more personal freedom and economic freedom, I think, in many ways right now than we did then. We have new challenges that we have to deal with to have constitutionally limited government. We still have a lot of work to do on the spending and to get to a debt-free future.
Indeed, we do. To the extent that you've seen some progress, is that a function, in your estimation, of the Trump presidency and the priorities that he has set in response to the promises he made to all of us?
Yes. Yes, I think that it is directly related to the promises that he made and the promises that he's kept. We've reduced regulations, and we have also changed our tax code. We've had major tax reform with him. That's grown the economy, and that growth has helped us have more economic freedom. So those are ways we have more economic freedom. And when it comes to personal freedom, I think this really ties to constitutionally limited government. And I think that one thing he's done that's so important is he because there's so many people in the deep state and in the establishment who hate President Trump, it is exposed that hatred in the way that they use and weaponize government against people with whom they disagree. And so he's fought for himself, and in fighting for himself, he's fighting for all of us. And I think that that helps defend personal freedom for all of us.
I want to come back to that in a minute, but let's just stay with the anti-Trump movement at the moment, whether it's the deep state within government or whether it's the Congress of the United States, specifically the House of Representatives, which will hold an impeachment vote, not on the final outcome of that process, but to begin it formally at long last on Thursday. And more generally, sort of the anti-Trump cabal, much in evidence at the Nats game the other day, as a matter of fact. But Jenny Beth, as you look at what has been afoot since Donald Trump was elected, actually it predated that, didn't it? But certainly in earnest since he was elected through the transition, now as president of the United States, how would you characterize what is going on here? Some, my colleague down in the West has described it as a sort of response by revolutionaries to a counter-revolutionary. Is it manifestly ideological as far as you're concerned, or what is really animating the anti-Trump cabal?
There's several things that I think one of it is pretty basic. It's basic human nature, and it's that people really don't like change and disruption. And I think that would be the first thing that motivates some of them, because he wants to go in and change the way that government functions so that it will be more efficient, more streamlined, and work better. He also, in doing that and working towards that kind of goal and making sure that the money that we spend, whether it's here in our own country or money that we spend in foreign aid, is spent wisely, it exposes how they operate, and it exposes potential corruption on their part and abuses of power or funding. And I think that some of it is self-preservation, like change, but self-preservation.
Yeah. And this idea that, you know, fundamental transformation was the objective, to the extent that Donald Trump is sort of putting that into reverse, would obviously move beyond just self-preservation. It's preserving their whole agenda. And so talk to us about what the Tea Party Patriots action team is doing at the moment, Jenny Beth Martin, in support of President Trump during this impeachment process.
Well, we have created a website. You can go to TrumpDefenseTeam.com. Again, that's TrumpDefenseTeam.com. And that website, we are updating several times a week right now with action items that people around the country can take. They're bite-sized action items usually, meaning it's not going to take you more than 10 minutes or so a day if you need to do the action item, where we're saying, okay, call right now. One of the items is, if you've got Republican senators and they sign the Graham resolution, call and thank them. If you have any of the Republican senators as your senator who did not sign it, call and urge them to do that.
And remind us what the Graham resolution is.
The Graham resolution is a resolution that Senator Lindsey Graham has created. It's non-binding, so it's not, it doesn't have the effect or weight of law, but it's a resolution that he has 50 people who've signed on to it, senators who've signed on, saying that they basically condemn the process that Speaker Pelosi has engaged on the House side. They don't think it's constitutional, and it is not the right or proper process for this, what she has called this official impeachment inquiry. And that resolution, I think, is in large part why she's now saying that the House is going to vote to open the impeachment or formalize the impeachment inquiry, which is absurd. It's absurd because you can't bring referees into a game at halftime. They've already tainted the process. But that's what Senator Graham has done. And the people who've signed it, some of them are not people who, you know, some of them that we've had trouble with in the past to get them to do the conservative thing. But 50 of them have signed it. It's sending a message to Speaker Pelosi and to the House Democrats that if they go forward with this and they spend their political capital on impeachment, it's going to go to the Senate, where it very likely will fail. And there are already 50 senators opposed to the process that they're engaging.
Yeah. And there may be more, we'll see, or there may be somewhat less, for that matter, depending on, I guess, what happens next in the House. But it is an important benchmark for the moment, and I think you're right. It helped get sort of regular order, if you will, adopted at long last, and it remains to be seen, as is always true of the House, what will come from that. But Jenny Beth, I assume you agree that she must have the votes if she's brought it to the floor. And that would suggest that there are a number of House Democrats who are in swing districts that were elected despite the fact that their constituents also supported President Trump. Are those individuals in jeopardy as you see it? Would the Tea Party Patriots Action, for example, be making a concerted effort there to hold their feet to the fire in particular?
Yes, we are working on that. And of the 31 swing districts that now are represented by Democrat congressmen and that President Trump carried in 2016, I think 28 of those 31 congressional districts have voters who voted for Trump in 2016, and they voted for the first time in seven election cycles, so 14 years. They did not all come back out and vote in 2018. Had they all come out in 2018, those Democrat freshmen would not be freshmen right now. The point in that is that they must realize that their position as a congressman is potentially in jeopardy because they have so many Trump voters in their districts. The other thing is that we're putting a special focus on those districts to make sure that they understand that their voters don't want them to do this. I do agree that I don't think Speaker Pelosi would do this if she thinks that she has the votes. The other thing, though, is that you and I both know there have been times when, say, Speaker Boehner or Speaker Paul Ryan would bring something to the floor, and they were not 100% certain that they had the votes they needed for whatever they were trying to do, and they would strong arm and pressure members up until the last moment. I think what Speaker Pelosi has to be really careful about right now is that one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to be a strictly partisan vote, meaning, I guess three things could happen, but I think one of two will happen. And that is, it will be strictly partisan. It will be completely down party lines, and there won't be any Democrats or Republicans crossing over. Or you may have a few Democrats who just say, I can't vote for this or I'll lose my position. And if that happens, then it's a bipartisan effort against what they're doing, even if it carries. The third is, I guess she could actually try to negotiate something with the House leadership to get Republican votes. But at this point, I don't see how the Republicans could possibly be okay with this because she's already started the process.
Jenny Beth Martin is our guest. She's graciously agreed to be with us for another segment. We will be right back with much more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We have Jenny Beth Martin, one of the most influential leaders in the world, according to Time magazine. She has been instrumental to developing and increasing yearly the impact of the Tea Party Patriots movement, and she is the honorary chairman of its action arm. Jenny Beth, I wanted to talk to you about something you mentioned earlier, and that is the expansion of our personal freedoms. And you talked about how President Trump was making significant strides in trying to limit government and get it out of the way of, you know, the free pursuit of happiness by the American people. There is a countervailing force, as you know so well, particularly with respect to one of our foundational freedoms, namely freedom of speech. And that would be this whole phenomenon of the social media or tech giants. What is the Tea Party Patriot Action Team thinking about, and what have you been experiencing at the hands of these tech giants, and what do you think it portends in terms of our personal freedoms?
Well, I used to program computers, so when I think about what's happening with the tech giants, I can think about what it would be like to program and to work for one of the companies, because that's actually what my degree was in and what I did in life. What I'm seeing with these tech companies are a couple of things. The thing that is most concerning is the most concerning item is Google and the way that they are manipulating search results. And they are doing it, and they have almost no competition whatsoever. When you're dealing with Facebook, it's a social media platform, and they do have competition. You've got Twitter, you have Facebook and Instagram, so it's not they're different platforms owned by the same company. You also have Snapchat. And so my point in that is that at least there is some very real competition for social media use. With Google search results and the great work that James O'Keefe and Project Veritas have done, we have seen just how manipulative their search results are. And we know that search results are important because they allow people to pay to get advertising ranked at the very top. And it's treated as ads. So they're transparent about that part. But you want to be up at the top and in the front page of search results in Google so that your position, your thoughts, and your website or videos show. And if they're manipulating that, they're controlling the kind of information that people get. It's very, very concerning.
It's quite dramatic, the impact, isn't it? Even just placing you a couple of rows down, let alone on the second or third page, which is oblivion.
Right. I actually think that, I don't think we have time to go through this, but I think they may be violating some campaign finance laws with what they're doing there. At least it would be worthy of pursuing with the right. I'm sure it is not an inexpensive thing to take on Google. But the other thing that we've seen is Facebook and other social media companies will either not allow a certain post to post. You can go in and flag a post, like a bunch of people can go and flag a post and say that it is offensive. And then the social media companies have algorithms. If too many people say it's offensive, I think they immediately take it down, and then they try to determine whether they should or shouldn't take it down. I don't know exactly what's happening behind the scenes with each company on that, but there's a lot of manipulation. And when people don't like what you say, when they find it offensive, they don't think you should be saying that, and they're using the platforms to attack and suppress speech, and the platforms are allowing themselves to be used that way. I think that I want to say one thing that I think is really important. I think that the social media companies that are doing this, they don't understand something that's fundamental to conservative thought. And that is that free speech, the right to free speech, is a right that's given to us by God. It is endowed by our Creator. We're born with it. Children, babies make noise. And trying to regulate and micromanage speech is like trying to regulate and micromanage breathing. And when you try to do that, people get outraged. And I just don't think they quite understand it, that they're messing with rights, with basic civil rights. And that's creating part of their problem.
Yeah. You know, I had Elizabeth Sabatish Wolf. I don't know if you know her, Jenny Beth Martin, but she was on our program yesterday. She's a freedom fighter, just as you are. She hails from Austria, though, and her speech was garroted by her own government initially, and then it was subsequently found to be a violation of others' religious feelings, as they were called, by the European Court of Human Rights. And her concern is, and I share it, that as that edict from a court that is supposed to govern speech and other, you know, rights and practices throughout the European Union is applied to Facebook or to Google or to Instagram or to YouTube, sort of in an extraterritorial way, that could wind up exacerbating what you've rightly raised a concern about already with these platforms in terms of their constraints of freedom of speech in our country as well. So I commend you for the work that you and the Tea Party Patriots Action Team are doing to try to push back against these social media platforms and giants, and I commend you for it. It's vitally needed. Let me ask you about one other thing that I know is also on your agenda at the moment, Jenny Beth, and that is the degree to which really radical gun-grabbing initiatives are now beginning to become mainstreamed by these Democratic candidates. How do you see our Second Amendment freedoms standing up in the face of this new partisan onslaught?
When I watch the attacks on the Second Amendment, it makes me realize exactly why we have the Second Amendment. We have the Second Amendment to protect the First Amendment and everything else in the Constitution. And without it, it sure makes suppressing speech from the government standpoint a whole lot easier. So these attacks concern me greatly. The things that we've heard, for instance, Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke saying about guns, and that he would take guns back, and basically even, you know, using profanity to say, "I'm going to take guns. I'm going to make you give up your guns. We're going to take your guns," whatever the exact phrase is. It is so anti, frankly, it's just anti-American. That is not what we are supposed to do in our country. And I am very, very concerned that there are a lot of people across the country who don't even understand why we have the Second Amendment at all. And they don't understand that with freedom comes risk. And individually, we have to work very hard to protect our freedom, even though sometimes you live in a riskier society with freedom than you would seemingly live in a more secure society with more government control. The thing is, government control always leads to more and more government control. There's no compassion, and there is a very heavy hand when government gets too much control.
Yeah, and freedom is over the side, inevitably. You know, Jenny Beth, I saw a terrific meme the other day that just wanted to mention, apropos what you've just said. It's a quote from Dave Chappelle, the comedian. He says, "The First Amendment is first for a reason. The Second Amendment is just in case the first one doesn't work out." And I think what you've just described is one of the real downside risks of losing that Second Amendment freedom is, especially if government or, you know, these other instruments of sort of control of the public are given free rein, we will find that we've lost those most fundamental freedoms, and we will be the worse. Our country will not be the same, and we as individuals will suffer greatly, I think. You stand in the breach, you and your team, Tea Party Patriots and Tea Party Patriots Action, Jenny Beth Martin. I hope you'll come back to us with updates in the course of this very exciting and challenging year. Jenny Beth, thank you for your time today. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.